Hey there, it is Dave Hompers, and we're on to part three of our brief exploration of why we eat food. And in part three, we're going to actually talk about how food affects your genetic expression. Now, so far in parts one and two, we talked about a couple of really vital roles that food plays in your life. It basically builds your body. It molds, it shapes, it structures your cells, your tissues, your organs, and then you as an individual being. And it does that on an ongoing basis as cells are broken down and then rebuilt again. And it also provides the energy for your metabolism, which is really the sum total of your chemical reactions that goes on in your body. And it helps you do what you do on a day-to-day basis, from the beating of your heart to the digesting of your food, to whatever work you're doing, talking, speaking, running, exercise, and all of those different things. So food is just massively important. And there's no wonder Hippocrates basically said that food should be our number one medicine. But there's a third reason why food is really important. And understanding this, I'm hoping, is going to really be a tipping point for you to start to really look after yourself in terms of what you eat and what you choose to put in your mouth. So genes and genetic expression is a really big area of interest for me. I've had my genes analyzed, and I've found that I've got two or three really important kind of weaknesses in my genes that could play out and cause some problems in my health later on in life. And I've empowered myself with that knowledge because I know exactly what I need to do on a day-to-day basis to make sure those genes don't express themselves in a negative way. And really, it just involves making sure that I consume adequate amounts of certain vitamins and minerals, particularly zinc, vitamin B12, folate, and also vitamins B2 and B6 as well. They're really, really important for me with the genetic makeup that I have. Now, genes and genetic expression, you know, it's one of those really interesting areas from the perspective that the medical system has us believe that we are the product of our genes. And that's actually nonsense. What we're kind of led to believe is that we can't do anything about our genes. We're born with a certain set of genes and genetics, and we're a slave to them. But the more recent research over the last 10, 15, 20 years has really pointed to a completely different picture where we're actually in control about how our genes express themselves. And it's the environment in which we bathe our genes that determines the outcome of those genes that we have, or the influence that they have. But just what is a gene? I mean, a lot of people hear the word gene and they hear genetics, but it's gobbledygook. I'll just do the best I possibly can to explain this in a very short space of time. And what you can see on this really cool diagram is that you have just kind of on the right hand side, looks like a little blob, and it's a cell. And in the middle of the cell, in yellow, you have a nucleus. And inside that nucleus, you have all your genetic material, or the not all of it, but most of it. And that's in the form of chromosomes. And as human beings, we have 23 pairs of chromosomes. And those chromosomes are really, really tightly wound ribbons, if you like. And you can see how if you move to the left where the biggest X is there, where it says chromosome, how that chromosome unwinds and keeps unwinding and keeps unwinding until we have little sections of those chromosomes called genes. And the overall unraveled ribbon, if you like, is called DNA. And so without going into huge amounts of detail, previously it was thought that we are basically a product of our DNA, that really determined who we are. It determines how we're going to be in terms of our health through our life. And if we inherit faulty DNA, faulty genes from our parents, then we're going to get the same diseases that they had and their parents before them and their parents before them and what have you. But as I said a couple of moments ago, we're now realizing from the research that that is simply not the case. We're not a slave to our genes. We are a slave to how our genes interact with the environment. And we are able to control all the major environmental factors that influence our DNA and influence our genetic expression. And it puts us back in control rather than thinking that we have to deal with just a given set of, or hand of cards, if you like, and that there's nothing we can do about it. Now, what do genes do? Well, again, just to break some taboo here and some dogma, genes really just act like Xerox machines, if you like. Genes print proteins. That's all they do. They are a blueprint for printing off and producing all the necessary proteins that you and I need to function properly, right? It's like a Xerox machine, a photocopier. We have a master copy of our document in the photocopier, and that's our DNA blueprint, which contains millions and millions of genes. We push the button to copy, we copy, and out spits an identical repeat or replica image of the original that's sitting in the Xerox machine. So if you think of the original copy as your DNA and your genes, then the printouts that come from those are actually the proteins that the body makes. And it cuts the blueprint up into millions and millions of different proteins. And that's how one of the ways that our body runs. That is not you necessarily, right? It's just a blueprint for proteins. It doesn't necessarily govern your behavior, your health, who you are, and your identity. It's simply the protein code that you have for your structure, if you like. Now, what we want to really do is understand what controls the printing. The printing is controlled by the environment. And this is where food comes in. So this is where the third mega important function of food comes into our awareness. Now, the Human Genome or Genome Project was completed in 2003. And they found a lot of genes, but they didn't find as many as they thought they would, as we're going to talk about in a moment. Now, this fancy diagram, if we just take it at face value, because I don't want to go into it in huge amounts of detail, is basically just showing you the categorizations of all the different genes that print proteins. And so we have down the left-hand side, basically a whole bunch of different types of proteins. So anything, by the way, that ends in A-S-E-S, ases, like in the very top left, isomerases, or the second one down on the right-hand side, proteases, anything that says ases, that's an enzyme. And our metabolism is governed by enzymes. Enzymes help all the chemical reactions go on in our body. So some of the genes print enzymes, and these are really important. But we also have structural proteins. We have storage proteins. We have what's called transcription factors that help us replicate our DNA. We have defense and immunity proteins that help our immune system work properly. And on and on and on and on. So we have all of these different proteins being printed by our genes, but the gene printing process is really controlled by our environment, and food is part of our environment. Now, how many genes do we actually have? Well, the Human Genome Project, depending on which book or article you read, revealed that we had somewhere between about 22 and 24,000 different genes. And that might sound like a lot, but there's a problem here. Because as it says in the quote here, a startling first finding of the first draft was that the number of genes was significantly fewer than previous estimates, which ranged from 50,000 to as many as 140,000 genes. So the scientists thought that we would end up with well over 100,000 genes, and it was incredibly surprising when we only actually came out with just over 20,000, 22, 24,000. Now, it's pretty staggering and startling, actually, to think that rice plants and maize, which is corn, have more genes than human beings. So just in this diagram here from Nature magazine, you can see that a fruit fly has just over half as many genes as we do. A little worm contains nearly 20,000 genes, which is really not that many less or fewer than us. We have 20 to 25,000. And then rice has twice as many as us, and so does maize. Well, this is really startling. It's really weird because we are far more complex as human beings than a rice plant or a maize plant. And we're certainly more than twice as complex in our arrogance, at least in our own minds, as a fruit fly and a tiny worm. So what explains our complexity? And it turns out that human complexity is determined by the interaction between the genes and the environment. And our mind plays a very heavy role in this. That goes way beyond the exploration of this particular presentation, but the way our mind works is very, very important here as well, because we, wouldn't you agree, we have a different mind. We have something in addition in our mind that to animals, to a fruit fly. Animals tend to run on the concepts of instinct, which means avoiding danger, and impulse, which means seeking food. So they run on instinct and impulse, whereas we have the ability to transcend that, okay? Very complex topic, not easy to explain, so let's just move on. Now, one of the really interesting articles that I found was from the US Centers for Disease Control, which is obviously a very, very important institution in the United States. And basically, just quoting from the document that I found, they basically said that information from the Human Genome Project has caused scientists to re-examine the role of genetics and other risk factors involved in the development of disease. Understanding this complex interplay of genes and environment will lead us to new methods of disease detection and prevention. Virtually all human diseases result from the interaction of genetic susceptibility factors and modifiable environmental factors, which are broadly defined as infections, chemical issues, which includes food, physical issues, nutritional issues, which is obviously food as well, and behavioral factors, which is where the mind comes in. So they're basically saying that disease is not just about genes, it's about the interaction of the genes with the environment. They go on to say genetic variations do not cause disease, but rather influence a person's susceptibility to environmental factors. We don't inherit a disease state per se. Instead, we inherit a set of susceptibility factors to certain effects of environmental factors, and therefore inherit a higher risk for certain diseases. Now, this changes the game because it suddenly means that we are back in control. If we can identify what the environmental influences are that cause problems and cause our genes to express themselves in more of a disease manner rather than a healthy manner, then we can get control back in our lives, in our lifestyles, and we can get our genes expressing themselves optimally. So these environmental influences that we're talking about, this is where functional medicine comes in, which is what I do, what my business is all about, and how I try to help as many people as I possibly can. The environmental influences of food and nutrients, that's a huge one. Toxins, that is basically goes hand in hand with food and nutrients because there are many toxins in the food supply. Infections, well, we run digestive health testing and other functional medicine tests all the time with people, and we always find infections. Every week we see dozens of different types of infections in people. Sleep issues, which cause stress. Radiation affects our genes. Exercise affects our genetic expression. Emotional stress, where the mind comes in, really influences our genetic expression. And then inflammation and other unwanted chronic processes in the body can also affect our genes as well. And a lot of this underneath, in just in a little red letters there, you see I've written decisions. We can decide right now what foods and nutrients we put in our body, what toxins, whether we continue putting toxins in or whether we want to actually take solid action steps to remove what toxins are already in our bodies. We can test for and remove infections. We can change our sleep habits. We can minimize our radiation exposure if we learn where it's coming from. We can do more or less exercise depending on whether we're already doing too much or too little. We can manage our emotional stress. We can bring inflammation levels down. We can do this and we can take back the control of our genetic expression. Now, food contains nutrients and toxins. We all know that food is nutrient dense if we choose the right foods, not so many nutrients if we choose bad foods. The bad foods will typically contain more toxins as well, but even the food itself, for example, broccoli, will contain both nutrients and toxins. Broccoli contains many nutrients that are helpful, Broccoli also contains toxins because it doesn't want to be eaten and destroyed. So it doesn't want deer and horses and other animals coming along and chewing it all up and eating it before it has chance to spread its seeds. So in a nutshell, all foods contain nutrients, but there's usually some toxins in there as well. And we have to understand and learn how to manage that depending on our initial starting point and how we feel, the level of our health. All foods can be good, all foods can be bad. And everybody is a little bit unique and different in terms of which foods are good and bad for them. Now, the foods and the nutrients and the toxins can have a very strong influence on the genes and can push the genes in expression of the direction of either wellness or illness. Processed junk food will typically push towards illness. Real whole organic food will typically push towards wellness. And if you eat them in an 80-20 kind of rule, really good eating habits most of the time, a little bit of treat food now and again isn't going to cause too many problems. Dr. Dean Ornish is a fairly famous guy. He's done a lot of work. He's pretty cool. I don't agree with everything he says, but there's a very cool study that he did back in 2008 and reported. And what they did was they looked at prostate cancer patients. And they put certain prostate cancer patients on a program of diet, changed diet, optimal diet, or improved diet, certainly. Walking, breathing and relaxation exercises. So classical lifestyle upgrade, if you like. The expression of more than 500 genes was altered in just 3 months. 500 genes. 450 genes that are considered bad were down-regulated. Their expression was down-regulated, if you like, turned down. So the bad genes went quiet. And 48 good genes, beneficial genetic expression, were up-regulated and started to communicate more loudly, if you like, using an analogy. Now, there really aren't any good or bad genes, if we're honest, but we have to understand that it's about the balance of the expression of those genes. We all have the same genes, but we might have different variants of those genes. Some of our genes might have little mutations that make them work either a little bit too fast or a little bit too slow, for example, if it's an enzyme. And that can change our metabolism and change our requirement for specific nutrients. Here's another quick diagram just to illustrate how foods affect genes. You can see that food and diet here in this diagram, which is actually from a published research article, the reference is at the bottom of the slide there. Certain substances like flavonoids, certain vitamins, amino acids, which are from proteins, fats, and other compounds will change metabolism and cell signaling and gene expression in certain areas of the body, from left to right here, the muscles, the liver, the pancreas, the brain, and then the fat cells. And this will improve glucose homeostasis in diabetes. So we know that there is a tremendous benefit of altering nutritional status and eating habits for particularly type 2 diabetes. Another quick example, something, you know, I don't want to get into huge amounts of biochemical information and detail here. I've got hours of stuff on just this particular topic alone, the NRF2 pathway. So I just want to mention it here. But the NRF2 pathway turns off inflammation. And we know inflammation is the process by which most diseases develop. Heart disease, autoimmune disease, liver disease, dementia, things like Alzheimer's disease, and also cancers as well. So if we're turning down inflammation, that's a good thing. And that's one of the things that NRF2 does. It also enhances cellular detoxification. And it increases the amount of antioxidants that we produce. And it just so happens that this beneficial NRF2 gene is activated, turned on by a variety of natural substances. And they include lipoic acid, which you can easily take in a supplement, turmeric, which you can either have as a spice in your food, or you can buy a supplement called curcumin, green tea extract, where we can drink green tea every day, pterostilbene, which is a form of resveratrol, which is another nutritional compound, glucuronephanin or phanin, which is found in broccoli, will also enhance NRF2, and even coffee will enhance NRF2 activation. So you can see that just by looking at one important gene and looking at the different substances and foods that can enhance its expression, we have tremendous ability to use food to improve our genetic expression within our bodies, which will help us remain healthy. Now, if this isn't all enough, remember we've talked about food as being essential for rebuilding our tissues, and when we look in the mirror, we are our food, basically, along with the air we breathe and the water we drink. And we also need food for energy, and we also need it for the genetic expression of our own human cells. But then there's the microbiome as well. You've probably heard of the microbiome because they're now pulling all the genetic information about the microbiome together. You can do a stool test and test the genetic composition of all the bugs in your gut, in your urinary tract, in your oral cavity, in your sinuses, nostrils, on your skin, even in your genital regions. So the microbiome is trillions of microbes living in harmony with our own cells, or not. If they become imbalanced, they can be pests, really problematic. We have bacteria, we have archaea, parasites, fungi, yeast, viruses even. And these organisms are called commensal. And they're called commensal because that word derives from commensa in Latin, which just basically means eating together. So these commensal microbes live in harmony with us if everything is in the right balance. Now, it just so happens that the genetic expression of the microbiome, particularly in the digestive system, is dependent on what we eat. So if we eat crap, processed, nutrient-depleted foods and all the toxins that are on there, and we consume a lot of alcohol and recreational drugs and medical drugs, that will really significantly alter the genetic expression of our microbiome as well as our cells, and that then can become a recipe for disaster as well. That is a huge topic. I just wanted to bring it to your awareness. And again, it's another reason why we run stool testing, because we actually get to see markers of in the stool of the DNA that's supposed to be there, lactobacillus, bifidobacter, certain strains of Escherichia coli, Bacteroides. These are all the microbes that are supposed to be living in the digestive tract and being in good to us, working together with us to improve our health. And then, of course, they want what they want as well, because we feed them with the foods that we eat if we eat the right stuff. So it's not just our genetic expression, it's the microbial genetic expression that is dependent on the food that we eat as well. So we know for a fact from the research that different diets can create different balance in our gut flora, our gut microbiome. Changing the diet rapidly changes the flora, and that can happen within hours or certainly days. And the flora then, as we've said, affect your genetic expression. Now, those flora don't just affect genetic expression directly. They affect the amount of calories that you absorb from food, brain development, inflammation levels, hormone levels, neurotransmitters. Would you believe that most of the serotonin and dopamine, which are your feel-good neurotransmitters, are actually made in the GI tract, courtesy of our interaction with the microbes? And all of this stuff can then alter our behavior, which is why the microbes in our GI tract are now strongly associated with so many mental and emotional type symptoms like depression and anxiety, for example, which so many people have on a day-to-day basis. So you're not a slave to your genes. I hope in this short presentation I've shown you that it's actually the way that your genes interact with their environment that makes their expression good or bad, for want of a better phrase. And it's the microbiome and the balance of the bugs as well. But whatever it is, whether it's our genes or the bug genes, they're all heavily influenced by food. Food is a really important environmental factor in our body. We can choose good food or bad food. If we get it right, we'll support our genetic expression in the direction of health or wellness. And if we get it wrong, we will support our body in moving towards illness or disease. So quickly, a review of the three lessons or the three sessions that we've just gone through in terms of the benefits of food and why we actually eat the damn stuff in the first place. So the food that we eat builds the tissues and organs in our body and keeps us nice and strong physically. Those cells are changing at different rates by the hour, by the day, by the week, by the month, by the year. They're being broken down and rebuilt, and we can choose healthy foods to make sure that newer, stronger cells are built. The food that we eat also provides the fuel and the components needed for energy production, for all of those energetic processes in our body to work properly. And food helps us express our genes at an optimal level. And it helps the microbial genes express properly as well, in a way that favors wellness rather than illness. So always remember the body architecture triad. We build strong tissues, we make energy, and we get healthy genetic expression through choosing healthy and optimal foods. Oops, I just pressed the wrong button there. I'd just like to say thank you for watching this short series of presentations. I hope you've enjoyed them. This is all part of the Dave Hompez membership program that we have, which is a 90-day plan, helps you adjust your food, helps you adjust your lifestyle in a healthy way to optimize your health no matter where you're starting from. And it's a very, very inexpensive program for the benefits that it gives you. You can pay monthly and it guides you step by step through the process of optimizing your health and wellness. You may already be a member watching this in our intro section. If you're not, please consider joining us. We get together weekly to answer your questions on live calls. We have some awesome online support forums as well. And I'd really love to help you get from wherever you are now, if you're not feeling well, to a position of feeling fantastic again in the shortest possible time. Thanks very much for consuming the info once again, and I will catch you soon.